Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our news and cues episodes. We have some cues I'm very excited about, Ken, as well as some Kenobi news. So I'm always excited for that.
Yes, and some at the time of the recording, everyone knows we record on Monday, and then sometimes news comes out on Tuesday. We'll probably miss some. There's some stuff coming with the Old Republic. We'll get to that next week. But there was some book news that hit right before we pressed record, and we'll finally get to talk about it again in time. But before we do all that, before we talk about honeymoons and Ewoks, we are going to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, our Four Center Recommends will come your way, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And of course, that is not all.
No, first we want to advertise our new book of poetry called Honeymoons and Ewoks. I think everybody's going to really get a lot out of it.
Yes.
Just spent Valentine's Day. I kid. We have another offer from Inside Editions. They are a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books as well as other pop culture books. They are offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we are continuing to recommend the Inside Editions book, Jedi Artifacts. It's a book, and yet it is also a collection of artifacts from the Jedi. Very accurately titled. Very, very fun, cool book. So if you are interested, use this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
Absolutely. Use it indeed. And help the show and help yourself. It's a mutual agreement there. Mutual positively affecting agreement there. All right. Speaking of positive things, Star Wars Life and Star Wars Life Adventures. Joseph, where did Star Wars meet your real life this past week?
This was just a wild week, Ken. This sometimes, you know, I'm going around life and I feel like Star Wars is in my life a lot, but it's all stuff that's really for the podcast. I, you know, watch this, read this, prepped this, thought about this, you know, and sometimes like, oh, I have this little Star Wars adventure. This was a big week for Star Wars for me, like literally physically big, because two things came to my home, Ken. The first was that Tashin book that I got on discount, the 99 to 2005 Star Wars archives.
Right.
And you listeners got to hear my ignorance right here on air. You told me multiple times it was big. I did not fully comprehend. I did not read how many pounds it was for this huge box game. And I, you know, I pulled it in and like, I my wife couldn't see quite the dimensions of it. She just saw part of it. And she's like, oh, did the Razor Crest come? And I was like, no, actually, this is a book. This whole thing is a book. The beautiful red sparkling cover, opened it and flipped through it. And yeah, it was great. And then the Razor Crest did come finally. The HasLab, Hasbro send away, the super ironic Razor Crest where they, I think the campaign closed and I think I, you know, signed up to get one right before the Razor Crest blew up on the Mandalorian. And now here it arrives just as Din and Grogu are all settled into their new N1 Starfighter hot rod.
It's, in a way, great marketing. They couldn't have planned it better.
Yeah. Sometimes when people say like Star Wars is all about the toys, like if it was, I don't know this would happen exactly in this sequence. But that box is just enormous. It's just endless beige. And I actually had both of them, both the Tashin book and the Razor Crest, in these massive boxes. And it's like, I'm sorry, that's it for our living room. Wonderful wife, Sarah, I'm sorry. took up the rest of the remaining space in our home for the most part, but opened the Tashin book, going to find a place for it. As we record, the Razor Crest is still in its big beige shipping box. I was lucky to have a really busy weekend, hung out with some wonderful friends and played video games and talked about Star Wars. It was great with some friends. And then I wanted to watch the Super Bowl yesterday. So I really wanted to have a ceremony. I don't know. I'm going to light some candles and put on some music. Like, it's not just any old day of the week. I want to take my sweet time opening the Razor Crest and studying it and all of its details and nuance. So I'm sure I'll report on that next week, because sometime this week I'm going to set aside, like, I don't know, 4 hours for a slow tantric opening of the Razor Crest box.
Light some candles. Indeed. I love this, that two items that are going to force you to redesign your living situation. Like, that is each in their own. Like, I had to move some stuff. And I have fortunate to have both of the Star Wars Archives books. And it's like, it's now a table. They get a table in the house now. Nothing else can really go on them. And now you have two decisions to make. You have big decisions to make.
Both of them were just in the boxes, just huge. Yeah. I was just like, we have to give our notice on this apartment. Like, I know we love it, but I don't know what we're going to do. We got to go. We will find a way. We will find a way. So those are my big Star Wars adventures, and more to come about that great Razor Crest that I'm so excited to have. Ken, I'm very curious about your adventures.
You know, mine was a lot of wonderful work this week, doing some stuff over at the Schmodown. Again, if you're a Schmodown fan, I'll be doing some stuff this season. And as I do, what is it, season 9 now? I can't believe
wow.
It's gone on that long. So it's kind of a new setup. I can't give away too much stuff. But I was hanging out with some folks. I ran into Adam Witt, who's been on this show before, Adam Witt for the Movie Guys. And he and I, you know, just we love talking Star Wars because we're grumpy positive. Like, we love it so much. We're grumpy at those who just aren't there for the journey. It's your own journey. Do what you want to do. But, you know, we're doing this over here. Either you're on board or not. And he said something that was just, we were talking about the prequel generation. This has been on my mind for a little bit. I might do a Spotlight Star Wars over this kind of thing. It's just, it's this idea of the prequel generation, I think we owe a lot to, because we're still talking about Star Wars in a lot of way, because it's that generation that embraced it when it was for them at the time that it was introduced to them. And Adam said this line. He goes, yeah, man, look, the first chance our generation got, they destroyed Star Wars, or tried to. Like, the first chance, 99, but even say 97, they tried to stamp out the flame. Like, you know, not everyone. It's a general statement. Joseph and I are certainly not in that. But even then, me coming out screaming about the prequels in 99 more than I even probably wanted to. And it just made me laugh. And it just made me, want to dive deeper into the prequel generation that said, no, this is my Star Wars. This is my Star Wars. And it's going to even come up again in our discussion in the news with some stuff Ian McGregor was saying. So anyways, it was just a wonderful, wonderful moment.
No, I mean, I think, Yoda's line in Attack of Clones, truly wonderful is the mind of a child, which does not mean think simply. It does not mean don't think analytically. I think what it is let go of some of your baggage. You know, I think that's so much what, I think that's why a lot of kids love the prequels. I think I was actually talking to my friends that my wife and I were hanging out with this weekend about growing up with Anakin and seeing Anakin. I mean, the power of being a young woman and going, this 14-year-old is telling all of these, middle-aged men with power what to do. My God, how could you not relate to that, right? But there's just the power of this, like, I have no other baggage. I'm just here for the ride. Does it make me happy? I don't check if it's okay that it made me happy. It just does, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, we are obviously not children, sadly, for us, maybe. But I think that's a part of maybe what the tension is for me right now in our Star Wars discussions is we are obviously extremely analytical and open to criticism. But I also just want to be open to listening to whatever my heart tells me. Like, did you enjoy that? Yeah. Okay, well, then there's probably a reason why.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's big, and it's big, and if it's Boba Fett riding a Rancor or something else, big, small, otherwise, we love connecting with that. That's why we're here every week. Makes a lot of fun. Anyway, so it was a fun moment. It's often dangerous to discuss Star Wars out in the wild. You never know who's going to jump into the room with their opinion, and there were some bad takes in there as well. But that's there. The other thing I wanted to point this out. This happened as I was going over some notes and having some breakfast this morning before we recorded it. And I am a Letterman fan. I know Dave Letterman isn't necessarily for everyone there, but I grew up loving Dave and influenced by Dave in a lot of ways in terms of comedy and now apparently beard growth. But he released a YouTube. He's got the YouTube channel, which all a bunch of old Letterman clips and behind the scenes stuff and everything. And if that's for you, it's a rabbit hole you can fall into. But this morning, one that popped up, not by plan, Joseph, was old Harrison Ford interview from 82. From the old show. This is where Dave was definitely less comfortable or interested in interviews, which was a period of his life, a long period. But also Harrison Ford, not comfortable, less interested in interviews. So it made for a wonderfully awkward, not tense and tension filled, like both were having fun and Harrison's, I think he gets recognized or gets credit for being funnier now than he was then. But I think it's the same. You know what I mean? Like, he's always been the funny guy, but he was movie star Harrison for so long. He still is. But you know what I mean? Like, now people, he's in on the joke on talk shows when I think we all weren't in on the joke before. And he's really funny throughout it. Anyways, it was to promote Blade Runner, which is crazy to think. Like, the movie hadn't come out yet. But there's a great line. He was talking. Dave says, what do you feel when you see your face on like an Indiana Jones thermos or something like that? And Harrison just goes, I have no connection to it. Just because they don't mention Han Solo by name. He goes, when I see all that stuff, it's not me and has nothing to do with me. And it just made me laugh because it's like, that's always been there. And even though he loves Star Wars, I love that Empire Dreams moment. Like, what do I feel about Star Wars success? Clap my hands and rub them together. I can really get my career going. Like, he's, and then he comes back to it in 2015. I think that's why I still go back to Force Awakens ago. I still am so overjoyed that Harrison came back and came back with the way that he did. Because you can even see by this interview at 82, he's got that kind of like, I guess we're going to do one more type of vibe. He doesn't say that, but he just got that. I love George. I did the space thing. Now I'm doing other things. It was just fat. It was a fun little moment in time. I recommend checking it out.
That's so great. And I also think Harrison's the level of comedy, charm, grump that is the magic that's Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Even all of his great characters have that level of charm and grump. Indiana Jones is doing that because he has to, but it's, it seems like he'd rather be at home reading a book and preparing his syllabus, that is kind of the charm that he brings to his characters. But also that's just like a really healthy perspective for him as an actor. Like, I played a character. I'm not Han Solo. You know, that's you don't have an action figure of Harrison Ford. You have an action figure of Han Solo. That's not my, you know, freakish head in that original Han Solo action figure from Kenner. That's Han Solo. I love that perspective.
Yeah, so good. Such a classic, you know, and he looks like Temple of Doom Harrison, right? His hair, Indiana Jones. It's that era. Like, he's probably filming that. What's going on? It's just fascinating.
I also just love, and then we can move on from Harrison Ford center if you want. But the other thing I wanted to say is I do love that Harrison Ford isn't just too cool for school. Mm-hmm. He's a nerd about acting and process and story. Like, he doesn't care about space stuff, right?
Yeah.
But he is in it. That's why there is that great moment in Empire Dreams. You're like, great, now I can get to work. And my favorite Harrison Ford, you know, thing is that he saw Solo twice. He saw a Star Wars movie twice because he's a nerd about acting and story, and he was connecting to that.
Love it. Yep. Love it. He's a treasure indeed. So check it all out there. All right. Well, from the grumpy charm of Harrison Ford, we're going to go to the charm of Star Wars news. Is that a transition? It is, and it counts. Late breaking news. Breaking news as of a recording time yesterday. We've got a new Star Wars book on the way, and old Joseph has it inspired some opinions. Save the date for the wedding of Princess Leia and Han Solo in The Princess and the Scoundrel, coming August 16th, 2022. Beth Revis, who wrote one of my favorite Star Wars books, and I know you love it too, Joseph, Rebel Rising, is the author behind this book here. She gave you a great little interview with StarWars.com, talking about some stuff there. So, Joseph, just we'll dive in. We didn't have time to prepare these notes. Overall thoughts, and then we're going to dive into the controversy. I guess I should highlight. No, hold on. Yeah, so this is right after the Battle of Endor. Han's like, hey, let's get married. They get married. There's a ceremony. And then they go for a honeymoon on the Halcyon spaceship, the space cruiser, which is, of course, in our real life, the Star Wars resort that you can go stay at. So that, again, is caused some opinions to come bursting out of the internet. Joseph, overall thoughts on this book and this idea, then we'll dive into the details.
I was thrilled to see this morning because it was a fun thing to announce on actual Valentine's Day. August 16th is the day before my birthday. So look, I already got a great birthday gift from the galaxy. I was excited to see that they are going in a book to just, you know, really dive into this moment, this choice. It's a fascinating, important moment in two of the largest characters of Star Wars. So I'm really happy that with these original trilogy characters, they are kind of are big trilogy characters of any of the trilogies, willing to tell these kind of big moments that some of the other books have kind of talked around, alluded to.
Yeah.
But honestly, my biggest reaction was Beth Revis. I absolutely adore Rebel Rising. I can't remember if you and I read it at the same time. I remember enthusing about it to you and discussing how we had to talk about it on Force Center. When I read that book, I already liked Rogue One, but it made me super love Rogue One. I think the way the book is written, the insight to Jyn, it does some different things from Star Wars. It's just one of my very favorites. And, you know, I don't know if I or we succeeded, but I wanted to be a cheerleader of that book that got more people to read it, because it's not one that I feel like fans of the books talk about as much. And it is one of my absolute favorites. So honestly, just that author coming back and doing another full Star Wars book is a huge part of my excitement.
Yeah. That's a great way to start the discussion there. Her previous work in Star Wars, and I know she's done a lot of other things, of course, but her previous work is just puts me in a spot of it's a trust tree. I'm in Beth Revis trust tree that this big story, it's big. This is big candid stuff here. A lot of people making their courtship of Princess Leia jokes. It's even in the article, so to speak, but it's big, and I think she's going to bring some great insight to it. And I love this one little note here in the interview. Just talking about weddings, but not about weddings, about ceremony and everything about that, because getting married isn't for everyone, and unfortunately some can't, and that's something that's continued discussion to have in real life. But so I'm not putting the emphasis on the weddings, but ceremony. And she describes the importance of a ceremony is a component of culture, but also a wedding is like a bright star in a person's life, a fixed point of light. And that's true for Han and Leia as well. And she had addressed earlier in the interview, you know, where they are and the ups and downs and the realistic nature. And, you know, I've always said, I'm kind of obsessed with this idea that Force Awakens pops up and they're separated. The great love story of the galaxy, and it seems to be in a different spot and where it ends up. And I just think it's very realistic and I love it. But I love that her view on that and how this book's going to be this whenever they get in trouble or wherever they have strain or tension in their relationship and all the bad things they're going to be dealing with, they can go back to what we're about to read and it can be a fixed point of light for them. I really was moved by that.
Yeah, I love that what she says about it. I'm trying to find it here in the interview. She talks about, you know, it's not just a happily ever after. Her words now. Instead, they have to work for decades to remain in love, and they consistently choose to make that happen. Even if they're apart, they're still in love, not because of fate, but because they choose to be. That's a really, really beautiful version of their relationship. I think that they are. You know, what's so great about the romance in the original trilogy is they are the kind of the star-crossed lovers, the princess and the scoundrel. It's there in the title. Mm-hmm. And they both know that this person opens up these other parts of me that I kind of try to wall off. Yeah. But I'm going to choose to let myself be open. And in order for this relationship to work, I have to constantly be kind of opening this part of myself that I mostly try to keep the door shut on. But I can't with this person, you know? That idea of love, of marriage, of partnership being a constant choice to work at it is, I think, really beautiful.
And true. Really is. Let's just go right to the big thing here, Joseph. The newlyweds depart for a honeymoon aboard the Halcyon Star Cruiser, the luxury vessel at the heart of the new Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser experience at Disney World Resort. A lot of people just plain upset, not happy with that. I'm seeing a lot of cynicism and anger about that on Twitter and some jokes and whatnot. And I'll start by saying this, Joseph, I certainly understand it. It definitely seems like it's all part of a big marketing machine. I'll kick it back to you here. I understand that, but we're about to discuss it.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me we can track through the entire history of Star Wars, the famous story of Lucas hanging onto the merchandising rights and the action figures, you know, exploding and, you know, a constant debate about if decisions are made behind the scenes for creative reasons or for marketing reasons. You know, were the Porgs really put there for what Rian Johnson said, or, you know, would a team of accountants saying, make a cute thing, you know, those debates are always going to be there, because just the truth of Star Wars is, yeah, it's an epic mythic saga about all these deep themes, and it's not a nonprofit. It's there to make money. As well as tell stories, right? And I think for me, like, I acknowledge that truth. That's obviously a truth. There's obviously the possibility of something that is more driven by marketing creeping in. But at the end of the day, the question for me every time is, does the story have weight and power? And if this book works, which I really think it's going to, because I have such admiration and respect for this author and for all of the editorial team who has been creating all these great books I like, I think when you read this book, it's not going to matter. It's going to be the story of their honeymoon. They're going to be going on a Star Cruiser, and I don't think it's going to be a cheap ad, because I just don't think Star Wars, in my opinion, has done that. And I understand other people disagree and they feel the marketing in certain choices. I consistently feel the story. I never feel like the characters are looking out to the camera and going, this doesn't have anything to do with the story, but buy this. Yeah. Everything that has become a marketing monster, like from the Ewoks to Porgs to Grogu, if there'd never, ever, ever been a toy of it or a cruise of it, it works in the story. And for me, that's the line. Now, if this book comes out and it feels like really empty and it just feels like Han and Leia are jumping off the page going, buy your tickets now, like I'll reconsider that. But I don't expect that because of the history of these books.
Yeah, no, well said, well said. And a lot of people are online as well are fighting back against this cynical line of thinking with the example of the Black Spire book, Delilah S. Dawson's book. And I am in that group where that book showed up in my mailbox and I was like, all right, here we go, right? And there was also some comic stuff with Doc Ondor and that ended up being pretty fun, but it was good. But comic is obviously different than a novel. And I think a lot of people pointed out that book and what Delilah S. Dawson did with it, which included that chapter of Vimerati walking around getting a tour of Galaxy's Edge. Including yep. Where here's the bathrooms, there's the food, here's what you... I mean, at the end of the day, that's a great book. And I know some folks who were like, aren't, you know, podcasting every week about Star Wars. Who were like, yeah, I read that book. It was great. That's one of my favorite ones. Oh, I love Vimerati. Love Archex. I love everything in there. And it's like, they're not worried about it. And I think it goes along with the nostalgia conversation that we often have around here where, yes, nostalgia pops up and we can talk about the big, you know, nostalgia is baked into Star Wars and all those things we always come back to. But at the end of the day, if Dr. Evans and Ponda Baba show up and it's a small little fun cameo and doesn't dominate the story and it's, it's off in its corner. That's not the same as them using the N1 Starfighter to thematically, connect to the bigger, point of the book of Boba Fett. And I think you and I always say, just take everything on a case by case basis and see how it affects the story and give it that shot. And I do trust that given this task, which was a task, and I think that's the thing too, Joseph. A lot of people, you can point at it and go, this is tied at marketing tying into the resort. Yes, it is. But that means the creators and the people behind the books there, they were given this task by someone in an office. What are they going to do with that task is how I'll judge this at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think the same thing for me. And I think it's easy for a view to become about, you know, this big corporation, Disney's trying to make more money. And like, that's not a revelation. Of course they are. We can listen to some of the, you know, investor calls. Yes, they are. But when you break it down, you know, I've been lucky to know people who have been involved with, working at Galaxy's Edge or coming up with some of those ideas. And, you know, knowing, I don't know Beth Revis, or any of the other authors personally, but they're people trying to tell the best story that they can. And I feel like it can be, for me, I get frustrated because it's easy to just go, well, Disney did. Like, well, at the end of the day, you know, Disney is a bunch of humans and there are writers and actors who truly believe in these stories and are trying to tell really good ones because they care. And I just never want to lose sight of that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can go all the stuff with George, but like they needed that first one, you know, there was no chance of a second if that first one didn't make money, which is the situation we're all still in, right? So I don't hold that against anyone, but also it's how you do it. And a lot of the things, the big IPs and stuff that don't work or fall flat for me do have those moments of I'm not connecting to it emotionally. You know, I grew up a huge Transformers fan. I didn't love the Transformer movies and this and that, and not saying anything if you're a fan. I'm not attacking them at all. I just... It didn't connect to my heart as much as Star Wars continues to do. So I want to continue to give it that trust and that room to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll agree with you. I think Black Spire is great. We gave it to our niece as a gift and she loved it. And yeah, there's a chapter where mm-hmm. the character takes a tour. It works in the book. It's a little, it's funny to be like, okay, yeah, no, this is a tour. They're going over the menu, but it works in the book. And I think this one's going to work in the book as well.
Yeah, so we'll see again. The book will be in all of our hands this August, August 16th, 2022. The Princess and the Scoundrel, which sounds like a great Disney movie, quite right. From there, we are going to look ahead to the Ahsoka series with some cast news. I always want to give you the chance to duck out if you just don't want to know anything about who's in the show, who they might be playing. I understand that as well. I'm sometimes in that spot, even doing a Star Wars podcast all these years. Sometimes I'm like, I just don't want to click on this story. So if that's you, we understand. Duck out for a few minutes here. But for those that are sticking around, The Hollywood Reporter ran an exclusive this week that Ray Stevenson will be joining the cast of the limited series Ahsoka. which I do believe starts filming in April. Nothing official from Lucasfilm, of course, but Hollywood Reporter is standing behind it here. The Vikings and MCU actor, among many other things, also voiced Gar Saxon in The Clone Wars and Rebels. But potential series spoiler, Stevenson is said to be playing a villainous admiral in the series, but not that one. Allegedly, who knows? Maybe he is that one, and they just want to, you know, Hollywood Reporter wants to keep the cover as best they can. So, Joseph, what are our thoughts on Ray Stevenson, a villainous admiral, and more? What do you think?
Oh, this is fun. This is really intriguing. You know, I know him from Gar Saxon, and then he played the character of Volstagg in some of the Thor films in the MCU. And apparently, I looked on his IMDb. I saw him in Dexter. I don't remember his performance in Dexter. Apologize to Ray Stevenson fans across the world that I don't remember his role. But according to IMDb, he was in one of the later seasons of the show.
Right.
Obviously, resume looks like a great actor. I love his voice as Gar Saxon. And from what I remember from my last rewatch of those Thor films, there's a ton of charm in the role of Volstagg there. So the idea of like a great actor with some presence, some gravitas, some charm and ability to handle comedy, that makes me interested in, you know, if he is playing a villainous admiral as being as reported. A lot of times we on screen in particular have met the admirals and the villains who are kind of uptight, right?
Yeah.
It's intriguing to be like, this is an Imperial remnant, you know, beginnings of the First Order, an admiral who is dangerously charming. That's intriguing to me.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at that too. I went to Imperial Remnant as well, if you're looking for just straight up kind of predictions and speculation. But I thought, you know, there's other Chiss out there. This we know. Timothy Zahn will let you know about that. So who knows who else is looking for Thrawn, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, a villain is. Yeah, he is going to play a Blue Admiral, but not that one. Not a that different one. Blue Admiral.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? Maybe he's a villainous admiral in the New Republic army or something. Maybe he wants more war. Who knows? And then it could go anywhere. I like him. I really do love him as Gar Saxon. A great presence on an off camera when he's in the VO booth there. So I'm just excited on that, and excited again as we get so excited for the other series that are coming our way with Book of Boba Fett and Mando Season 2 in our rearview mirror. I just get excited knowing that new Star Wars is being cooked up and filmed and in pre-production, things we don't even know about. That just always kind of gets me excited. So it's good to hear this.
Yeah. And I think for me, the other big question of it, because we'll wait and we'll see exactly who he is playing. But with all of the drops that have come of people who are, you know, reported to be cast as characters from Rebels, it's really feeling like, you know, Ahsoka's a journey into purgatory, into unknown regions to find Ezra. It makes me really intrigued by how much of this journey with Ahsoka is going to be about her discovering the Imperial Remnants morphing into the First Order.
Oh, that'd be interesting as well, too. Love that.
Yeah.
A lot of possibilities. We'll keep you updated when things become official and more casting rumors become casting truths. All right, final story of the day, and it's some Obi-Wan talk and Obi-Wan McGregor, as I'm calling him, who had that Expedia commercial that caused everyone to intake and think, is this it? Is this it? I personally was not. I liked the idea of a Kenobi trailer Super Bowl. I wasn't personally expecting it, so I enjoyed the Expedia commercial there. Were you full, Joseph? Did you have that moment of, oh, my gosh, wait, we're getting it?
No, not in the slightest, because here I had talked on this very podcast about it would be really interesting if they did a Kenobi commercial in the Super Bowl, because I think they're going to want to try to reach out to more casual Star Wars fans to try out Disney Plus with this Obi-Wan show. But I was remembering back 4 years ago to that Solo trailer, and everybody knew it was coming, right?
Yeah.
You and I watched the Super Bowl together so we could cover the Solo trailer. I kind of feel like Kenobi is such a big drop that if it was going to be in the Super Bowl, they would have let us know ahead of time.
Yeah. It's fair. No, it's fair. Yeah. And with Moon Knight kind of being next up, I think you'd even pointed that out last week. Just kind of makes sense.
And then I was really entertained that it was absolutely Ewan McGregor with beard encouraging us to go places. And then he walks onto a sandy beach. We're trying. We're trying, Ewan. We want to go to Tatooine with you.
Almost there. But Ewan McGregor was speaking with Forbes and Jeff Conway over at Forbes. And he had some great thoughts and words about the prequel generation and what we were talking about earlier. And Deborah Chow was the director of more. So diving into some of it, McGregor talked about his loving his experience playing Kenobi again, particularly doing it for the prequel generation fans. Same. I mean, it's quite interesting after the experience of making the first three films and living through sort of their reception in the world, which wasn't always glowing, I have to say. And then now meeting the generation who we made those films for, the children then and now, people in their late teens and early 20s, those people who were kids who we made those films for, they loved them. To them, they're their Star Wars films, you know? For us, it was the original films of the 70s. But for them, it was our films. Were their Star Wars. So to step back into his shoes again, me and Kenobi, and do a whole series about Obi-Wan Kenobi for those fans, it just makes me really happy. So I really absolutely love this statement here. And I want to dive into this here before we continue with the rest of his quotes here. Joseph, what are your thoughts on Ewan, by the way, who was in the past, seemed to express some understanding of the prequel acts, right? Like I've seen some things about that and some quotes, so you maybe even turn into clickbait stuff of the blue screen and all the stuff in that whole era. He's very much of the original trilogy generation like us. So what do you feel about him kind of coming around to this point of view?
I feel great about it. As he says, it just makes me really happy. The only thing I disagree on is I feel like Ewan lost a little bit of time there in his estimation of how old prequel fans are these days.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
Late teens, early 20s. I relate to that a lot of like, oh, wait, I lost a decade.
Yeah.
Besides that, I'm just joking about that. I absolutely love this quote. I think for me, it's a triumph of acknowledging generational change, right? I think it's great that he can receive other people's experiences, because that's what this is about. This is about people saying to him, like, I know you had your own experience making them. I know you've heard all this negativity for all this time, but I am telling you, Ewan McGregor, that you meant everything to me, that those movies were so important to me. The fact that he can go, oh, cool, that's a really different perspective. But I hear it, I see it, it's totally valid, and maybe in approaching this role, this series, I can internalize someone else's point of view that is largely defined by generational change. That's amazing, that's great. That's an incredibly valuable human skill to say, I acknowledge your perspective, and maybe I'm even going to allow it to change my perspective a bit.
That's big stuff indeed, and I think that's something that... affected my own Star Wars journey. We've documented it often and we'll continue to do that about our growth and path to becoming prequelists and you kind of maybe there even before me. That's key to our friendship and me hearing your side and going, you know, that's not just something that I'm being convinced by from Joseph, which is, you know, not it happens a lot. You're very good. You're very insightful. And I've talked to some friends who are like, I don't even know if I trust my own opinions. I just hear his and I love him. Shout out to you, Billy. But it wasn't just that. It was just like you were saying things and bringing things up and it was connecting to little pockets of joy in my heart, which then allowed me to look at those fans who were telling me on the Jedi Alliance days, time out. You and Maude are making fun little jokes, but don't forget that's our Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got here. And that's how why we're watching your little YouTube show. So it is a valuable skill indeed. I think it's important, and especially in Star Wars. Again, our generation, given the chance, tried to destroy it. Tried to stamp out the flames of joy in a general sense, of course. So I love hearing the man at the center of it. And then that he, and for Ahmed Best, it's a bigger journey that's important. I hope to God that Jake Lloyd can at some point, who's going through a lot of and has gone through a lot of things in his life, and I don't know the current update on where he is in his situation, had battled some mental health stuff, battled some legal problems. I hope to God there's a pathway to where Jake Lloyd and Star Wars can come together again, and I would love that. So I just love hearing someone who is in the center of it, who put their heart into it, who then had to sit there for decades and hear how horrible it was and how you ruined my Star Wars, and going, hey, I just did this thing with love. Like, I just love that he can come back to it and maybe experience a new round of joy.
Yeah, no, I so totally agree. And I also think that for me, this is yet another reminder of, I think it's absolutely wonderful to interview actors about their experiences. And I think there's sometimes, and I know this from personal experience with working with many actors, being one myself, there are actors who really go like, let me take the helicopter view and I'm going to have a total and complete understanding of this story and I'm going to receive it and talk about it like a fan or a critic. But more often than not, in my opinion, when you interview actors, they're telling you about their personal experience of the thing, this unique, interesting thing that they went through, right? And I think almost all of Ewan's comments, maybe there's one out there where he's being a little bit more universal and he's giving his opinion as a viewer of the fan of the films. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think he's always talking about, it was hard for me with the green screen. Yeah. I didn't love the process of the green screen. Clearly, he loved being in Star Wars, playing with the lightsabers. And, you know, you can see even in Revenge of the Sith that far in the process, he's having a ton of fun doing the lightsaber choreography with Hayden and their brothers. And like, obviously, he found lots of joy and love. But when he's quoted, it's not like, I have sat down and I have analyzed the prequel films and this is why they are thematically poor. I am a welcome to Ewan McGregor's fireside film criticism. He's talking about his personal experience as an actor being challenged by the green screen.
Yeah. Which, you know, Ian McKellen had that problem with the Hobbit films, right? Famously. Great stuff. Great point. No, great point of view to have there, Joseph, there. Ewan McGregor went on to talk about Deborah Chow and her directing, saying it was a great experience. Deborah Chow directed all the episodes, and she's really good. She directed a couple of episodes of Mandalorian, and she's a really great director. She really knows the Star Wars world inside and out far more than I do, and he laughs. I love that. Our own Kenobi's like, I'm not sure I have all the canon down here. And we just had a great time. So far in live action, Joseph, live action Star Wars, we've had multiple directors, which has been both a joy and at times an area of discussion when fans don't seem to like one particular director's take or vibe, or sometimes we wish we just had one. So now we're going to get it. How are we feeling about Deborah Chow at this point in the Star Wars conversation, being at the helm for every episode after two seasons of Mando and one of Boba Fett with a lot of different names on the screen there?
I'm thrilled and excited for lots of different reasons. You and I have talked both on air and off air about the loving Mandalorian, loving Book of Boba Fett, but they are they're kind of like Star Wars with a specific spice. And I'm excited to see something that maybe has it's still absolutely Star Wars, but maybe has a slightly different tone, slightly different perspective. And having one director for the entire thing, I think we're going to get to know who Deborah Chow is as a director, and you know, what of her own life experience does she bring to the way she seasons Star Wars, and then having it kind of stay consistently that tone, that flavor. You know, we got to see two episodes of Mandalorian that I think she knocked out of the park, but I think with six episodes telling this one specific story, I think we're going to get to know her as a director a lot, and I think it's going to be really good to be kind of in that mood, that perspective that a director brings, and stay there for six episodes.
Yeah, I'm really curious. We've gotten it from, especially with Boba Fett, from a writing point of view, with Favreau kind of sitting in his office taking the lead, not a traditional writer's room, which is a different kind of setup, all those kind of things. There's been a lot of discussion about that, good and bad. But I at the end of the day, enjoy, much like a movie, hey, what's this one person's take on it? And for six episodes, and you're right, chapter 3, chapter 7 of Mando season 1, got some great stuff, some of my favorite stuff in there as well, both action and comedy and heart, all those kind of things were on display there. So I'm excited. And the reason I really want to discuss that is I had kind of forgotten that in a way. And then when this interview comes up, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. It's all her at the helm. And that got me kind of more excited to see her work on this level.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really excited about seeing her work and seeing that, what's it going to be like to have that kind of really tonal consistency? Because, yeah, I think Book of Boba Fett is really unique in that the actual story is so... Mm-hmm. Filoni co-wrote one episode. You know, there's that other kind of on-set writer who's credited. But that's Favreau, you know, he wrote that for the majority. Yeah. But then there are some tonal shifts in the directing. And it'll be interesting to see it not there. I'm also just really curious, Ken, about the overall tone of Kenobi, because I think it's some of the tension of people who really like Book of Boba Fett, people who struggle with it, people who just really dislike it. I think like wild tonal swings from kind of silly comedy to pretty dark violence to optimism, you know, to just to really pulpy adventure that's just kind of over the top and bonkers. I think those wild tonal swings are very Star Wars. They're very George Lucas like. But I'm fascinated that I think in particular kind of some of sillier comedy and more bonkers pulp action or pacing are not always what modern audiences are into. And so sometimes there's some tension with them. So it got me thinking about what the overall tone of Obi-Wan is going to be. And it feels like there's certainly going to be like, I think, some fun comedy, some good Obi-Wan snark you know? But I'm wondering if kind of tone-wise it's going to be fairly serious, fairly weighty. These are big deal decisions for Kenobi. Facing Vader again, it's probably going to be kind of heavy. I think for the comedy that's going to be there, it's probably going to be kind of wry and snarky like Obi-Wan. So how much the tone makes a difference in how people receive it is something I'm so excited to watch for.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. The tone of Kenobi. What will it be? Well, on the story side, the story they'll be telling us, McGregor said this: I always felt there was a story between episode 3, where I finished playing Obi-Wan in the movies, and episode 4, where Alec Guinness is Obi-Wan Kenobi. The series writers and Deb and I and everyone, I think we crafted, or they crafted, a very fine storyline. I think people are going to like it. That is a very dangerous statement to say in Star Wars. I think people are going to like them. And of course, I wouldn't necessarily expect him to say, I don't know, I think we missed it. You guys decide. Maybe not something I'd expect there, but this has been brought up, but I don't think it's any great insight there. But it's for Ewan McGregor to come back and finally do this, whether it was the movie or the series. I think he's someone who doesn't necessarily need to do it, and I think if he's gonna put his name on it, he's gonna make sure he's gonna do it right, and his hands are on it as executive producer type of credit as well. So that just similar to Beth Revis writing a book of Han and Leia's honeymoon on a resort. I've really given him a lot of room with trust, like to be like, all right, you're back, and you came back for a reason. That's why I like this statement. I believe in it. I choose to believe.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think you know, when he was kind of joking about like, yeah, I don't know, hey, there's going to be an Inquisitor, maybe, and they're from where? Cool. I don't know any of that. What does Obi-Wan care about? You know, how does he feel about him? I think Ewan McGregor is such a consummate actor, and he like wants to get in there and make sure it all makes sense to him. And I think the fact that he is, you know, trying to be very, very generous, you know, when he says, I think we crafted, and then says, or they crafted. I think that's a gentleman trying to go, well, they wrote it, but I feel like I also crafted it, because I'm there on set going, well, why? How? Yeah. What if we... what if he was more angry about this? What if he was more sad? What is he hiding? Like, in such an actorly perspective that he feels ownership is great to me.
Yeah, that ownership. And then going back to the prequel generation thing, this is someone who, with some of the stuff he went through, and far less than Ahmed Best, who by all accounts had his career destroyed by Jake Lloyd, who had his life destroyed by this. You know, Ewan came out okay, right? Did okay. Still one of our biggest actors, most respected actors. Let's be clear about that. But for him to say, hey, I'm ready to dive back into this, I think that, again, is because of the prequel generation. It is because he believes in this story, because there's going to be a lot of pressure around that. And that's the final thing I want to discuss here in the news here, Joseph. There's always going to be a lot of pressure on a Star Wars project, every single one of them. Including a tie-in marketing to a resort. A lot of pressure on the projects. But why do we think that there's an extra layer of pressure for this one? Is it just simply because it's Kenobi? Do we think Mando, at least season one, had the advantage because it was a quote-unquote new character and people, you know, just didn't have expectations to a character they hadn't met before? Is that all it? Is that just self-explanatory? I'm asking a question with an easy answer here, but I just feel there's definitely pressure on Kenobi.
Yeah, I feel like it's from a couple of places. I feel like, and I think you're really nailing them. I think the first season of Mandalorian absolutely had an advantage of, like, this is a kind of a new way into Star Wars. There's plenty to know and find, you know, even more rich if you're super into Star Wars. But, so many people told me, like, I watched with my entire family, and, you know, we're a family of five, and four of them had never watched Star Wars, and they were all in on Mandalorian. And I think that there is this hunger for the new in Star Wars. And I'm right there too. I really want some new things. And I think there's this pressure. Can people go just take a deep breath and go, new is coming. You know, we've got the Acolyte. We don't know exactly what Andor is going to be. And can you just put those, you know, desires aside for a second and engage with this? I think that's a part of the pressure, because I think there's going to be a lot of people who are just going to be like, ah, characters we know again. You can't do anything without a Skywalker in it, Tatooine again. I think those things are going to be a pressure on the show. Mm-hmm. And then I think on the other side, you know, you got the fact that Kenobi is loved by multiple generations, right?
Yeah.
Even the grumpiest original trilogy fan who could tell you for hours what's wrong with the prequels will always end the diatribe with, but Ewan McGregor was great as Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? Yeah. Like, even the people who still of our generation do not like the prequels, they still give two thumbs up to Ewan McGregor, right?
Yeah.
So there's a huge amount of Kenobi pressure. And then the final thing for me, Ken. I think this is like the head canon challenger, right? This film, this show is going to tie back to Revenge of the Sith and to A New Hope, right? Absolutely huge parts of Star Wars storytelling. And if people have lived for decades with the head canon that Vader and Kenobi did not meet again until A New Hope, that's a lot to set aside. And I think in order to engage with this show, you're going to have to set that aside. And some people just might not want to. It might just be, this is wrong. This is not my headcanon. I don't like it, you know? But if you love the idea that Kenobi might have tried to get through to Vader, it's a feast. And then you're so hungry for that. I'm on that side of it, I have to, monitor my expectations, you know?
Yeah.
To make sure I don't go too hard, because I'm an Obi-Wan once thought as you do. Great. To me, that is the log line for this show, and I can't wait.
Yeah. That is, I think, of all the things, and you're so right. There's already the, oh, good, more Tatooine, and there's a lot of folks who don't want any names that we've heard before, any surnames otherwise in Star Wars, and I respect all that. And I think we're going to get that. I think you're getting that a lot in High Republic, but I understand that might be books and comics you want on the screen. I'm here for new as well, and I think sequel trilogy put a lot of new out there. But yeah, there's a lot of pressure for me spending decades wondering what he was doing out there, and I understand maybe letting it go. You know why? Because Revenge of the Sith, which I'd been waiting for a battle on a lava planet for a long time, because the novel hinted to that in 83. And to finally get that, and I remember thinking there, I don't know, this doesn't quite seem even what they're referencing in A New Hope. This doesn't, I don't know if it 100% lined up in my head for years about the conversation that they have in New Hope before they fight for that final time, and how... I think there was always some room, and that conversation in Jedi, I think, does lend itself to some room. But you're right. If you just don't want to see them fighting again, if you just want completely new stuff, that's another kind of pressure on the series. Pressure all the way around.
But yeah.
I'm ready for it. So excited.
Me too. And I'm sure we will have this conversation many times. The line in A New Hope from Vader, when I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master. I think like that one line is a challenge for a lot of people. But as other fans have pointed out, I kind of like interpreting that line as when I left you is when I left the Jedi, you know, when I chose another path, you know. And I'm sure we will revisit that discussion. But I think you're so right, Ken, to talk about the pressures, to look at what's coming. And for me, it's just a really good reminder to just be like, let that all go. This is a story, and just try to engage with what's on screen. And, you know, if my heart tells me I love it, I will let my brain figure out why.
That's a great way to look at it there. Well, we'll all know soon enough, May 25th. Man, you can't get here fast enough. Though, at the same time, please stop marching on. We are about to take a quick break, but before we do, I want to give you our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we got today?
We are continuing to recommend The Midnight Horizon by Daniel Jose Older. It is the next High Republic adventure. We're excited to dive into it.
We are indeed. Download your free audiobook. Go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. Let's do it. Let's take that break. And on the other side, your questions here on ForceCenter.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We are back here on Force Center, episode 400 of the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet. We've been standing on this deck for a long time, and we're going to be here a long while to come. So, Joseph, what are some questions? We go to Twitter, we go to Patreon. What do we got?
Yeah, we go first to Twitter, and this comes to us from Ross Squatch. Ross Squatch says, you gents have said that if we wonder if something is truly Star Wars, we should look to George in what he set up. However, his Tuskens are a contradiction to what the Disney Plus shows have shown. Is this character evolution, a retcon, or something else? Love the show. Thank you for those kind words, Ross. Yeah, let's talk about this. The Tuskens are definitely presented, if not different or a contradiction, they're definitely presented in a new light on the Disney Plus shows. And for you, how does that relate to the idea of let's look to George? Is it a contradiction for you or something else?
No, I think it's an evolution. A quick answer there for Ross Squatch, which sounds like a great gentleman soap. I think it's close to some of this soap that's out there. Dr. Squatch, not a sponsor out there. But Ross, I think I look at it as an evolution. And a lot of times to, I guess, clarify a little bit of my mind, sometimes when I say look to George, it's really the simple, basic core stuff that you hear George repeat over and over and over again, and greed, power, how that can bring it down, all of the hope versus fear. All those things are mostly what I mean versus details. And I'm not suggesting Ross is interpreting it that way. I think he's right to say, hey, if you think of something, is that Star Wars? And you want to go back to the creator, to the guy at the center of it all. And I think that's a great way to look at it. And that's why I look at Tusken, the Tuskens of the Dune Sea, both in first Mando and now here in Book of Boba Fett, as just an evolution. And I guess to stumble into it, Joseph, of just like George in 73 to 76, putting this movie together, was drawing from inspirations from his own childhood. And even though George has some pretty strong beliefs about people and people's rights and helping the poor, and George, I think, has a pretty darn good heart, you're still sometimes a victim of time and context to that time. And I think he just was simply looking at something different, Western films, and just kind of putting that in there. And I think it's a joy to have some of the, you know, Filoni and Favreau to come back and go, all right, well, let's move past that and expand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really agree with that. And I think this is a great question from Ross Squatch, mm-hmm. you know, helping us always, you know, make sure that we are, you and I are clear on what we're saying and what we mean.
Yeah.
And I think for me, when I don't want to speak for you, but I suspect we agree. So feel free to correct me. Mm. I think when we say look to George, for me, that is almost always about going back to the underlying philosophy, you know.
Yeah.
I think details might change or evolve, or like in this case, I think it is about those films only had the space and the narrative choice at that time to show this side of the story, and now we're seeing the other side of the story, you know. And that's real different from me of like you know, well, like a change Lucas himself made of like, you know, if you saw Star Wars, then A New Hope when you were a kid, yeah, Greedo didn't shoot at all. It wasn't Han shot first. It was Han shot only. Right. And that's like, that's a detail. And you can talk about it as a retcon, all that kind of stuff. But for me, what's happening with the Tuskens is that it is showing another side of them. Well, let me stop there. I have some more thoughts, but I want to ask you if you're coming from the same place, Ken. When you say, look to George, are you thinking more about the philosophical meanings and ideas mm-hmm. of the film? Or are you sometimes even thinking about like, this is what George thinks Aqualish look like, or this is what canon is?
Yeah, no, I never thought of it in terms of canon. You can make your George hates his own canon jokes here too, if you want. But I've always taken it as meaning, and it's sometimes just like four or five big points. That's why I said the hope and fear and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of times I feel when you're digging into Star Wars, you do kind of come up with the same themes again. Well, a connection, and hey, this one's about found family. And it's like, yeah, that pops up a lot for a reason. And it needs to be simple because that's what George wanted, a simple morality tale that can reach everyone across many generations and many ages and many points of view. That's why I do agree with you on that. But little things here and there, detail wise, yeah, I can say that sometimes what I mean when I say look to George.
Okay, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah, and I think for me, the Tuskens' portrayal in Mandalorian Book of Boba Fett is absolutely a celebration of the philosophical lessons that I've taken from Star Wars, mm-hmm. That I would, you know, attribute to Lucas as the primary author of those philosophies that I think have then been carried forward absolutely in all the animated shows, all the sequel films. In particular, the respect for all cultures, everybody matters, everybody has a perspective. To me, it's like it's taking like the morality, the philosophy of the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi, and applying that to the Tuskens. Like the Ewoks can be seen as just like they can't matter. The Empire doesn't think they matter. Even at first, Han's like, "What? They're just an obstacle. They can't." And like, but then you give them respect. You listen. Same thing with the Gungan and the Naboo conflict. And I feel like it's taking that respect for all cultures, respect for different points of view, in applying it to the Tuskens. I also think there's a huge thing in Star Wars about having respect for people who can be in harmony with nature, right?
Yeah,
Star Wars loves its tech. It loves its spaceships. And that's all great. But so much about the Force is about being in harmony with nature. Mm. And the fact that in particular in Mandalorian, the episodes where they're dealing with the Krayt Dragon, and in Book of Boba Fett, where like everybody else sees the Tatooine as this wasteland, but they know how to be in harmony with this, you know, natural world.
we had this big discussion about why so much Tatooine, and I really liked what you said here and how that connects to that episode, Joseph, of seeing the other side of the story. We now have the chance to do that. So Tatooine, a planet from Luke's point of view, is a rock out there in the middle of nowhere, and it's keeping me from my dreams. And that was true for Luke, and now we get to go back and revisit Tatooine being a center of the criminal underworld. Hell, George did that in Return of the Jedi, but now we get to experience it more. And I really like that. And I really like what you're saying about the Tuskens too, is now we have the opportunity to go back and not holding George to the flames over his use of the Tuskens and New Hope. He was doing something pretty specific and doing something he was kind of raised on, but now we have a chance to, like you said, see the other side and learn it. And they even address a little bit of that Tuscan conversation about, some of the Tuscan tribe survives by killing. That is not us. That is not this tribe. And we get to both address a little bit of the Tactic Clones beat, and then now we get to get a little more time with it now. And I just think that we have that opportunity now. And I think George would be behind that as well, because he kind of loved doing that as well when he did.
Yeah, absolutely. To take things that he loved as a kid and sort of reinterpret them and reexamine them. I really agree with two things you said that for me, and this is my personal opinion, it is addressing a problem, because so much of Star Wars is about empathy, right? Mm-hmm. And A New Hope, yep, they fall into some specific tropes that are absolutely from Westerns. And in Attack of the Clones, even though clearly the Tuskens must have a perspective, right? Yeah. But there isn't room made in the narrative for it. And yeah. I love that. Right or wrong, they do have a perspective, and these Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett have given them more of that perspective, and it makes them, like many Star Wars characters, in a cycle of violence between different groups of people. And I think that's so important to examine when we love something as young people, and then kind of make it a part of our own work to examine, what are we bringing with us. Last thing on that, my wife and I recently, I'd seen it when I was a kid, but I didn't watch it in forever, rewatched The Searchers, which is kind of a landmark Western, because it does offer, there's some direct New Hope that there's a homestead burning that's just like, yeah, that's Star Wars.
Yeah.
But it does get into in its a small way for back in the day.
Yeah.
Talking about perspectives,
mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's like Lucas was inspired by The Searchers, but that bringing that perspective of everybody didn't quite happen. And now it has.
Now it has. Yeah. Yeah. Picking up a thread, continuing, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, super complex issues. Always recommend that people search out the voices of Native and Indigenous people on these issues and hear all of those different perspectives as well. And final thing for me is really agreeing with you. If you're kind of approaching this from just like fun Star Wars nerdery, that line of there are many Tusken tribes and some survive by violence, some survive, we survive by hiding. Like if you're having fun in canon world, well, that's your answer. There could be dozens more Tusken tribes with different perspectives that we've never met,
Yeah.
Great question, Ross. Thank you for asking that one. We move on to our question from Lydia Ostmo. Lydia says, with Grogu facing the choice of the Beskar chainmail, symbolizing the Mandalorian culture, way of life, and the lightsaber, symbolizing the Jedi culture, way of life, is there not the option Tar Vizsla chose of being both? Sometimes it takes us a little while to get to questions, so we all know Grogu made the choice.
Yeah.
But I still thought this was a great question, especially since so much of what we're dealing with the Darksaber is all because of Tar Vizsla, right? So, Ken, where do you go with this?
I first of all, Lydia, this is the question of the time right now here. I think it's a fair question to ask, and I think under different circumstances, I could see it working. But I just look in terms of something you and I keep coming back to is this is myth storytelling, mythic storytelling, and therefore these choices I really do believe need to be heightened. And there's definitely a world in which you could have a realistic discussion of. Well, could you do both? Could Din just hang out with Grogu for a weekend and everything be fine? And there could be a way to look at it. And I'm not suggesting that's what Lydia is saying here. I'm just saying, I just really think in this particular chance, you do need to choose one or the other, because it represents just something bigger in our own lives and everything like that. And I think you could, the story of Tar Vizsla, we don't know completely yet. We don't know what sacrifices he made.
We don't know if he never connected to his Mando roots, or was the creation of the Darksaber a dangerous attachment that led to things. And sure enough, the Mando of people of the time felt that was their saber and went and got it. so there's some things behind it. I just think for what that moment in the show what was talking about is there, you couldn't have your feet in both. You had to make that decision, make that commitment. And Grogu kind of already had, and Luke felt that. We've been discussing in other places and will again. So anyways, I'm open to any interpretation of it or any thoughts of anyone saying he could do both. I just think for this moment, Grogu made the right decision and the decision and had to make a decision.
Yeah, I think that's where I come down on it. I think this is such a great question and such a good thing to examine. And for me, it's I understand having a strong reaction of like, well, this is kind of a beautiful thing to do, is to blend cultures, right? To take this part of my heritage and this part of my heritage. But I think I just so react to this as a beat in Grogu's journey. And we know a little bit about Tar Vizsla, but I love what you're saying, that we don't know how that story, we don't know a lot about that story, right? We don't know if the rest of Mandalore was initially furious that he left. You know, we don't know that he didn't, leave the Jedi. We don't know that he didn't strip his armor at some point. I mean, I know we've seen the cool images of him. Like, we don't know if this ended poorly from the Jedi's perspective, from the Mandalorian's perspective, from Tar Vizsla. So I think that's a huge part of the story that I really do hope that we will get someday. The part of it that we do know is that it clearly didn't end well at the point where Mandalorians broke into the Jedi Temple and said, "That's ours. We're gonna take the Jedi part of it from it and make it the symbol of our ruler." You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
There was some unsuccessful cultural blending, at least in that moment.
Yeah. In fact, I'm even scanning through. There was a lot going on this morning. I should have probably looked this up a little bit more, including the flashback in Trials of the Darksaber. Fascinating story. But yeah, there's not a lot that says I don't know. It was sometime after his death that a statue was erected and then they went to get the blade. But I know there's still room in my mind of him going, I went to Ilum. I got a Kyber. I'm going to make my own. Well, that's not right. It could have been. Who knows? Who knows? Or maybe he was a great example and Grogu can look to him down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that it's fun for me to say, like, okay, well, what are the parts of that story that we don't know? Yeah. And for Grogu, I think the thing that I'm really responding to is this was a choice he made in this moment, right? That he was not focused on being a Jedi, and he was not in a place right now to give his entire devotion to the Jedi way. I think, from Luke's perspective, that's a big responsibility. You really have to make sure that you've mastered your powers, so you're going to help people, not hurt people, so you can protect yourself. Like, you time moves differently for you, so if you go into a deep force meditation, you might open your eyes and Din's gonna be 87, I think it was really about that moment. And I think what's really intriguing to me is in theory, we'll see what happens with the Star Wars story, but Grogu's gonna live for a real long time, and I don't think that this moment means there isn't a possibility where he ever goes, oh no, I've lived this life with Din, and we've developed our Mandalorian culture of two, or I've become a part of, retaking Mandalore. And now that I feel I'm older and I feel confident, now I'm going to look to the Jedi way and to look to that part of my heritage.
Yeah. And I think it's okay to, I mean, Grogu's already made kind of one choice and then gone a different direction, from Mando season two to now. I look at Luke, going to get additional training in the swamps of Dagobah and going, I'm out of here, making some big mistakes, and then coming back and finding a better way or the right way for him at that time. So there could be more storytelling here. And it, again, Lydia, it is the question of the time right now.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. And there's a part of me that thinks like, yeah, that would be a great story if someday Grogu is in a place to be able to choose both. But right now I think Grogu's like he's like a little kid who can't decide his major.
I was going to say that, or he's like, do you ever have that friend that, maybe they're a little wild and then they get married and then that friend still tries to be wild
and married. And you're like, the chainmail and the saber of life are in front of you. You must do one.
Yeah. And I've known the opposite. I've had friends who are like, yep, marriage, kids, and then like flash forward 5 years later and they're all in.
Yeah.
On a different lifestyle. That's right for them then. Yes. All right. Great question, Lydia. We're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. Brian Tiller says, hello, gents. So I'm on my third rewatch of Rebels within about 1 year. Just finished the episode Jedi Knight and heading towards the finish. I got to thinking, why do I always cry at the end of this episode? Is it the wonderful character development of Kanan and his self-sacrifice he made for the group and bigger galaxy, the loss of another Jedi when we have so few we can lose, or that I turn 50 this year and one starts to reflect on their own life, one's own accomplishments, and impact on others? Whatever the reason, it happens every time. So my question to you is, what are your top three crying moments in Star Wars? Can be movies, animated shows, series like Mando or Boba, what have you. My other two, in addition to Kanan's sacrifice, is the scene when Chewie learns of Leia's death in Rise of Skywalker and Ahsoka laying her saber at the helmets of the clones at the end of Clone Wars. Oh, and when Luke looks out into the sunsets just before vanishing at the end of Last Jedi. Okay, that's four.
There you go.
So this is great. Brian Tiller just did his full episode of Star Wars ranked best crying moments and looking to us for a few of our answers. So Ken, where do you go with this?
This is actually hard for me to answer. I've had a few big ones. I'm clearly not afraid to cry. I've cried on this show over great losses in my life or the loss of friends. I can be emotional. And over the years, I have not been super emotional with Star Wars in that outward way. It's just it's this great kind of joy and a great kind of inspiration. I talk often of that Admiral Raddus moment because of what it represents, not just for in that moment, but what it represents to the Star Wars story, but to my fandom. So when Admiral Raddus jumps out of hyperspace to declare that he's Admiral Raddus of the Rebel Alliance, I feel as though that's the story I grew up with. You know, like it's the beginning of that in a way, you know. So I am moved not just for what's on screen, but little 7-year-old Kenny playing with figures, you know, and the rebels are taking on the Empire. And that's what that moment means for me. And I did not cry during Last Jedi. You know, Luke's death, I needed to process. And then later on, but I can go back and get moved by things more. A lot of moments in real life, I think I've cried more as a Star Wars fan or, you know, teary eyed or sometimes just sobbing. I recently, the under the helmet thing, the first time I watched it and Jeremy Bullock and the segment on Jeremy Bullock and his widow sharing some of their stories traveling together and Jeremy representing Star Wars for so many and people during a time when it was just kind of regaining its footing among the fandom in the mid 90s. I was moved by that story. And started crying in that moment. So there's a lot of those moments. In film, though, I'll run through this kind of quickly here, Joseph. It is Rise of Skywalker. That's why I get sometimes a little defensive about that movie. if it didn't move you and you don't love it, that's totally fine. That movie moved me. It moved me in story and it moved me as a fan. And it was a culmination of years of story and years of fandom for me. So Chewie falling into his knees upon hearing about Leia's death is one of my moments. Like I was kind of holding Brian. I was kind of like, that's, you know, but I've already cried some tears over Carrie Fisher herself leaving, you know, and I've processed that a little bit and but then all of a sudden, well, when it hits Chewie, God, that got me. And other moments I've talked about it's not a Navy, it's people. That's made me cry. There's that kind of thing. But going back, the Kylo Ren saying dad and Han cutting him off and saying, I know, gets me more than anything now. And then the final hug between Rey, Finn and Poe, something I didn't necessarily specifically cry at in the theater because I was already crying or happy or everything or bracing for discourse impact, which was also in the back of my head. But now watching it at home on Disney Plus, that moment has got me more than any other moment. So it changes, Brian. It changes.
Yeah, it really changes over time. I think I did, you know, some emotional moments probably as a young man. Cry at specific moments of watching the original trilogy, but a lot of it has been this sequel era and some similar moments to Brian, some similar moments to you, Ken. I so echo the experience you've had with The Rise of Skywalker of like, I'm really, really moved by that film. And I think a lot of times it's not necessarily moments of sadness. There's an element of sadness or loss sometimes at the moments that I cry at. But the moments I cry at, Ken, are relief. Where people get what they truly need from someone else, or moments where sort of the characters, but then me vicariously through them, or us as Star Wars fans vicariously through them, have been in this place of doubt or fear or cynicism. And there's this idea that just lifts you up and just goes, no, you weren't wrong to love this. You weren't wrong to get something from this. You were right to hang on to hope. Those are the moments that get me. A couple of them for me, I think in the past as a kid, I think I've been borderline teary eyed in Return of the Jedi when Luke catches the saber, exciting as that is, or when he says, "I am a Jedi like my father before me," even with the head nod, which I enjoy on a almost comic level. You know, my dad back there, because those are the moments of I have persisted. I have made it through this journey, and I am becoming the person that I need and want to be, and that gets to me. In The Last Jedi, the sunset moment is, I sometimes get teary at that, but it almost feels like a victory to me. The Luke moment that gets me is about this affirmation. It's the whole big speech from Luke, or it's not a speech. It feels like it. It's one line, but it feels like a speech.
Right.
But, the resistance is reborn today. The war is just beginning. And I will not be the last Jedi. The Last Jedi gets me because it is that Luke's gone through, his moment of doubt and cynicism. And he's come back and he's like, no, the Jedi are needed. People do need to stand up against, tyranny and fear and anger. And you're not going to stamp that out, Ben. It's going to continue as it should. We talk a lot about Last Jedi being something that questions Star Wars to validate it. And I just feel this huge rush of validation on I will not be the last Jedi to the point of it making me teary on some of my viewings.
There's something about that too. Where when people have those big breakthroughs the same. I think a little bit with the Rey and Finn and Poe, it's just I can get wrapped up in their journeys and seeing it on screen, and it just always that moment particularly reads so real as three performers who have went through this Star Wars journey together,
right?
Which can sometimes be tumultuous. So I think there's a little bit of that of that person got it, which going back to the raddest moment for me is that it isn't just him putting that flipper down saying to fight. It's them going and Mothma smiling and we can't hide anymore. And we have made this decision. And I'm like, because I know that's where it's going to go. And I know it was a brave moment, and I know that's things I can do or not do in my life, and maybe I fail sometimes, and maybe other times I succeed. So, it's people having realizations.
Yeah, declaring that, I am here to fight the good fight, Cheeks. Cheeks are also a huge problem for me when it comes to crying in Star Wars, because I have two cheek moments. Grogu touching Din's cheek, but the fact that he took his helmet off for no reason other than to connect. That's so powerful to give Grogu what he needed and what Din maybe needed in making that change. And now we're going to get to see this great storytelling that's playing off of at what price did he do that? And Grogu touching his cheek and just that connection between two humans. So great. I've kind of jokingly called Han's cheek touch, the cheek touch that helped save the galaxy. Mm-hmm. But the moment in Force Awakens makes me teary because it's like, even after you have done the worst thing imaginable, I know you're still a good kid in there and I still love you no matter what. It's mercy. It's like there's nothing you can do that will ever make me stop loving you. In a hand stroke from one of the most emotionally repressed characters in Star Wars.
Yeah.
and then that pays off with that beautiful cheek touch in Rise of Skywalker that is giving Ben exactly what he needs. That's another one of those. This is exactly what this character needs. And it's a beautiful relief. And then the final one for me, I'm so glad you mentioned all those moments in Rise of Skywalker, because all of those, but the one that really gets me is Rey calling to the Jedi, making this really hard choice, pushing through, finding connection, finding strength through connection, but it's still her journey and all those voices saying, these supportive things that she needs to hear. But Yoda's alone, never have you been.
Mm.
It just devastates me because it's so easy to feel that, to feel like Rey of like, I'm trying to carry this all by myself. I don't even know if I'm doing it right. I probably failed. I'm dumb of me to even try to reach out. And then to have this kind voice go like, no, you've never been alone in this is
There's something about that moment, particularly in the theater the first time. Again, you know, here I am. It was like my lip starts quivering. You know, Leia goes, you know, Han comes back. I'm starting to cry. And it just built, yeah. Right? And you're sitting behind me going, yeah, my Kent's shoulders are shaking with tears. there's something about that moment that even I wasn't analyzing Rise of Skywalker for themes in that moment, right? But when Yoda says that, you're right. There's something about that. Luke's line gets me too there. There's something about that my heart connected it to Zori Bliss going, they win by making you think you're alone. There's more of us, Poe. There's more of us, Poe. I'm not thinking about that actively the first viewing. I never do. I just think Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. And I think there was something powerful about that Yoda one where it's like your heart's going, hey, did you hear what they were saying in this movie? And it moves me. It even kind of moves me now discussing it. So I really back your play there on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that theme is so strong throughout, but you know, it hits my heart and it hits my brain. You know, it is Yoda just saying like, hey, Rey, your deepest fear your entire life.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's not true. You're good.
Like, yeah.
And we all need that sometimes, right? We need those deep, deep fears. We need a loving voice that comes from a ghost Muppet.
Yeah.
To say your deepest fear, it's okay.
It's okay.
The worst thing you think about yourself, it's not true.
We could talk all day. I don't want. It's funny. This is just turning into a Rise of Skywalker party. But I'm telling you, that's where my heart. I move more than any other movie by that one, and that's why I call it a spiritual journey. I call that one my Star Wars church. And there was one time Joseph recently was watching it. You know, you and I will either watch for lines. I got to research Rise of Skywalker because we're doing a ranked on it. Or I'm gonna eat this sandwich. I guess I'll watch from Star Wars. I was watching it and. When that lander with Finn and Jana and the crew, when it lands there and they're like, you know, block their sensors, they're speeders. They're not in speeders, you know, whatever exact line is.
Yeah.
And the boom and the gate drops by and all the Orbacks come out. I started crying at that shot of Finn and Jana, the Orbacks and BB-8 rolling onto his destiny. I'm sitting there eating a Subway sandwich crying my eyes out over this. It hadn't happened necessarily before, and I don't know if it'll happen again, other than being maybe even moved now discussing. So that's what I just love about Star Wars. Sometimes something you've seen 50 times, just your own spot and where you are in life or what you're feeling, everything, boom, it gets you.
Yeah, it always hits you different. I think that's maybe our big message. It's there's always an opportunity to cry at something in Star Wars.
There you go.
That is a great question, Brian. Thank you very much for sharing it. I think, Brian, your insight about being affected by the stories, but also how they, attach to your life and thinking through age and how you impacted others. All that stuff is so important, and thank you very much for sharing that with us, Brian. You know that Ken and I are at an age to be thinking those things too.
Yeah.
So we're gonna end here with a little bit of a palate cleanser from the deep emotion to the fun. Stephen Campbell says, "Hello there, Force Center. As with our real world, food and drinks are an important part for those in the Star Wars galaxy. Between Dex's Diner, Chalmers Cantina, or Docking Bay 7 food and cargo, the possibilities for filling one's stomach with delicious sustances are endless. Ken and Joseph have made their admiration for cooking and cocktails respectively well known. If you were to follow Jon Favreau's footsteps a la the movie Chef and open a food truck somewhere in the Star Wars galaxy, which planet or city would it be in? Additionally, what would be the food and drinks on your Mendor? Andorian tip-yip, roasted porg, Yoda's slop stew, blue milk, fuzzy tauntaun. Thanks for taking my question and continue with the great content. May the Force be with you." This is such a great question. Mm. You know what, Ken? I'll go first and let you close out here.
Yep.
My mind went to two places on this. I'm not super comfortable in nature because I just was not raised as like a camping outdoor person, but I'm really enjoying spending more time at the beach, spending more time in parks and really trying to connect with nature more. So there's a part of me that would be like, what would it be like if I was able to live like some Star Wars characters do for like hundreds of years to set up just like a little cocktail cart on Octo? And just be staring out at nature and, you know, once every, you know, hundreds of years or whatever, a Jedi happens to come through, like the caretakers are there with all their preservation. I'm just like, I'm still just like, I take, you know, some water and I desalinate it And I, you know, I brew it in these jars over time and make these a special. Yeah, here's my thalassirentini.
Yeah.
So I have that. That's the sort of like the fantasy one, the less realistic one. The realistic one is I would want to set up a cocktail and light bite stand at the highest point of Coruscant possible, because I love in big cities going to places that have cocktails and a view where you're looking out over the whole place, you're thinking about it. So if there's like a cocktail stand that was like outside the Galaxy's Opera House, you know, I would love to be out there and have. I would have Jedi themed cocktails, and they would probably use a lot of standard ingredients, but they would be named after different Jedi. Like, you know, there'd be like a Jarl poof drink that has like an extremely long stem, his neck. All and the Yoda glass would be just this little tiny thing that's like tequila and lime juice or something. So it's green. And then I don't know what light bites I'd serve. Maybe plants, but not Drenger. I don't know.
Yeah.
More about the cocktails for that. So those are my answers. Right. I want to close out with your fun.
Yeah. You touched on something that I love. I love a good food truck, but like a food cart or something like that. In a well placed, but maybe weird when you stop and think about it. Or perfect. Like one of the Kaiser hospitals I would go to. I go to a different one now, but there was a bigger one in Woodland Hills area in the LA Valley, San Fernando Valley out here. And like, there was a coffee cart out there. It makes total sense, right? Well, it's a hospital, needs coffee, but it was also so out of context because it was like right outside the emergency room. And what that meant is that at some point someone said, you know what, there's some people going through some stuff in there. They're going to want to get out and get some fresh air and get a cup of coffee because it's a long night and they need the comfort of a donut. I'm setting up here and I'm going to get my permits and get it and whatever. And I always was obsessed with that one a little bit. You're making me think of, again, it makes perfect sense. It's food and beverage for a convention, but we were walking around Celebration Chicago and just going, let's go straight to the hot dog cart and the beer cart. Like,
yeah,
I love those ones there. So in that spirit, I guess you could do where it's like a place that's maybe a little serious, but people need snacks. And I'm assuming a food truck in the Star Wars galaxy means it probably can travel through space, right? It's a little you think. I was like, if the Razor Crest opened up and to sell Yip Tip, I would go to Yavin 4 outside the temple there, the Masasi temple where the rebels are meeting. Like, did you guys all just get in? Did someone just yell, what is she proposing? I've got a snack here for you to blow off some steam. I think I would propose that. But my real answer, I was trying to think, where's a place where there's like a vibrant, still fun, kind of like little people are having some fun doing quote normal things. I'd take my food truck to the Colossus.
And
I see if Doza would let me do it. I don't know, get some permission to see if Aunt V is okay with me setting up there. But you know what I mean, just setting up out there. I would serve, maybe it's because I worked in malls for so many years and I remember when the ice cream dots came up, the ice cream of the future. I would bring the taste of some sort of ice cream substance to those on the Colossus at a gourmet handmade space ice cream truck.
Oh, this is absolutely amazing. I love that your philosophy of bring it to a place where people need a little something. To pick them up, to be a part of community like Colossus. These are like great approaches, but I love the focus on ice cream because now, Ken, I'm picturing like every ship in Star Wars and asking like, which is the funniest if it like it pops out of hyperspace and then the ice cream song plays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's a space ice cream talk, like Dash Rendar's Outrider pops in and then you hear the ice cream song.
I would love it. I would love it.
It would be great. Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for all these great questions from the deep to the fun. That is Star Wars. So those are our questions, Ken.
That is our questions. That's where we are. What a fun, wild, and deep dive through the world of Star Wars. We do this every week. We are on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are also on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast is available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and a lot more. Just search and find us there. tpublic.com/user/Force Center is where you can support us by merch. If you want to support us directly, You can go to patreon.com/4center. You can find me at Catnapsock or go to catnapsock.com for more information. I'm still highlighting St. Baldrick's because they've got a big event coming up on March 4th that my friend Jeff Saunders is involved in. Jeff and the fine folks at St. Baldrick's Foundation are shaving their hair to help cure childhood cancers and get research for it. There's a big event, on March 5th. But you can go to stbaldricks.org and get more information on that organization, what they do, and choose to support if you'd like to. Joseph, what about you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. I will probably post lots of videos of my long process of opening the Razor Crest. So if you're interested, you can find me on social media. You can also check out all sorts of stuff I've done and will continue to do on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. This week, I would like to continue to highlight the group Illuminative. I think as we continue to have these very valuable discussions of the Star Wars characters of Tuskens, but how they relate to the stories of real life people. I think it's really important that we spend some time really listening to the real life people that the Tuskens are connected to in the storytelling. So if you want to check out this group, here is what Illuminative says about themselves, how they describe the group. Created and led by Native peoples, Illuminative is a new nonprofit initiative designed to increase the visibility of and challenge the negative narrative about Native nations and peoples in American society. A few of their projects include things like creating opportunities for Native creators in TV and film, ending the use of Native culture as mascots in sports, and Native storytelling projects, all sorts of different great stuff. If you are interested to learn more or possibly donate, you can go to illuminatives.org.
Great stuff indeed. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for supporting. And thank you all for helping spread the word and saying how you love our content. It's not lost on us in this world. We don't do this show for praise and everything. We do this to just kind of share our love for Star Wars. And we're so happy to have you out there on board and on the space cruiser to the Colossus to sell ice cream with us there. So thank you all. Thanks for the support. And we'll see you next time. This was Force.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.